So can you just start off by talking about what that's been like to be the youngest person on the Providence City Council?
It's been pretty unbelievable. You know, there are good days and there are bad days. I came home to accept a job with the Rhode Island Coalition Against Gun Violence. And so I left college early when I was a sophomore in college to accept this job with the Coalition Against Gun Violence. And I ended up moving home and deciding to run for office. So I was campaigning while I was still in college, and it's funny looking back on it. I was leaving school in Wisconsin, and you know, it was a swing state at the time, and they had a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, and I'd been doing a lot of you know, advocacy work trying to stop really, really bad conservative bills. And so I kind of came back because, you know, Trump had just been elected and Providence was doing some amazing work. We had just passed the Community Safety Act in Providence. You know, the state legislature had just passed the Protect Rhode Island Families Act, and I was like thinking that Rhode Island would be kind of this like progressive enclave and it would be so much easier to do amazing organizing work here. And I got home and it kind of wasn't the case. You know, like I found that there are a lot of more conservative Democrats here. And I found, you know, on the city council, it's not just passing really good legislation. Like every year is not a Community Safety Act year. And so, you know, it's hard. I think as the youngest person, often people think that things that I believe are kind of common knowledge and not really controversial, and that I think my peers think are not controversial, baby boomers and kind of the older generations think is bomb throwing. So yeah, it's difficult. You know, you have to learn really quickly. But it's definitely interesting being the youngest person just because the viewpoints as people get older really are more conservative.
So how did you prepare for this job?
There is no preparing for it. Every day is different. I kind of tell people it's like learning a little bit about everything. You know, some days it will be like more basic parks and rec kind of style. You know, like I'll be talking about trash collection and I'll do what I call neighborhood mediation, which is I try not to call the police unless I absolutely have to. So if like people are mad at their neighbors, I'll try to go in there and be like, guys, what's up? Let's talk about it. So sometimes it's like that. And then sometimes it's policy work and talking about like the really serious issues, like what the heck is going on with the schools and affordable housing. But every day is different.
Recently, you were in the news in support of the person who threw paint on the statue of Christopher Columbus. Can you just talk about that and why you said you stood with that person?
Yeah. Well, for me, it was kind of, you know, a natural thing. I didn't really think it would be a controversial opinion to have or would make all the waves. And I do kind of feel bad that it made so many waves because it really wasn't my action. It was, you know, some incredible brave person decided to go out there and vandalize the statue. And, you know, they should be getting all the credit for their bravery. And so I feel a little bad about that. But, you know, I think Gene Valicenti asked me the question on the radio, do you support it? And I, in no world would I condemn that in any situation. You know, what happened was, and you know, like I joke, I've been saying to people that have kind of been surprised that they think that the vandalization is a bad thing. And I joke, are you even on Indigenous Twitter? Like, do you even, have you ever heard what Indigenous populations say about Christopher Columbus and how they feel when we as states and as cities and as Americans continue to celebrate it? It's absolutely ludicrous. You know, like this is a history that, you know, no one in America should be proud of. The fact is that Western colonization destroyed an entire, you know, people, an entire nation of Indigenous people. And when we celebrate someone for coming to this land and discovering it when it wasn't their land to discover, I think it's, you know, it is damaging. And it's one of those things where we need to begin to look at our history differently. And I'm not saying erase it, but I am saying, you know, we should not be celebrating it. And, you know, when there are organizers and there are activists and there are protesters doing things like calling attention to the statue, and, you know, the statue wasn't damaged, by the way. Like when they're doing things like painting it red and saying, stop celebrating genocide, we should listen. especially if it's activists of color, especially if it's people, you know, that are being harmed by these celebrations.
Is this something you're going to pursue, like the talk about having the statue moved?
I think the statue should be removed, not moved. I absolutely will pursue it. I think that I wish we had had this conversation, you know, before Columbus Day. But next year, I definitely would like to see the statue removed before Indigenous People Day. And I would like to make sure the city calls Indigenous People's Day what it should be called officially, Indigenous People Day.
And what are some of, you know, your particularly progressive priorities that you would like to see pushed forward?
You know, there are a few. One of my biggest priorities right now is around banking. On Smith Hill, I have some of the highest concentration of payday lending offices in the city. So just on Smith Street alone, there are three payday lending offices. And, you know, unfortunately, the truth of the matter is at the State House, the revolving door has allowed really powerful people to lobby for the payday lending industry and make sure that we don't change the interest rate laws so that Rhode Island kind of meets national expectations for what people should be paying, what interest rates people should be paying back at. And so because we can't really do anything at the state level, which is really unfortunate, I would like to find a way to make to give people other banking options and make banking more accessible. You know, I would love to see some banks accept the PVD ID, which is an ID card that, you know, undocumented folks can get, trans folks can get. I would like to see banking options that have lower barriers to entry, so you don't necessarily have to have, you know, great credit or savings. And, you know, when we're talking about these things, you know, we're talking about ways to just make people's lives better, you know, open brick and mortar banks in neighborhoods. My neighborhood is underbanked. So that's one of my biggest priorities. The other priority that is on everyone's mind and certainly mine is education. A few weeks ago at the show cause hearing, I stood with a few of my counselors and testified in opposition to the order that would govern the school takeover. And I did this not because I don't think the schools are acceptable and not because I think that, you know, the status quo is working, but I did this because I think we need to be demanding the best for our students. And, you know, I think that I'm confident, and I think a lot of the student organizations are confident that they're not going to accept anything less. So, you know, I'm excited to see the takeover plan. I'm excited to see who the new superintendent is. But that's definitely one of my top priorities.
And other than advocating and talking about it, what can city councilors actually do to improve their schools in their own wards?
You know, unfortunately, because we don't really have control of the schools anymore, there isn't a lot of policies we can kind of advocate for. But, you know, I think every counselor definitely has an obligation on a case by case basis to work in their schools. Something really fun that I'm doing right now in an elementary school in my ward, Harry Kazarian, is I'm going to get ready to run a student government chapter. And so, you know, it's these extra things that, you know, our students deserve. Making sure that they're civically engaged, making sure that that they're getting resources that schools that have you know, higher incomes might always get. And I think that every counselor should definitely be an advocate for their schools and make sure that that they speak to their principals.
And can you tell me a little bit about the PVD After Dark campaign and what's going on with that?
Yeah, so the PVD After Dark campaign has been a project I've been working on with Travis Escobar from Millennial Rhode Island. And it's really been a response to a few things, the first being a significant amount of violence outside of nightclubs and bars in the city the last few months. And also, it's a response to hearing from young people. You know, as the youngest person on the council, I feel like I have my ear to the ground, and I know a lot better than a lot of my colleagues, frankly, on what needs to happen to make the nightlife safer, make the nightlife more accessible, and grow the nighttime economy. And, you know, I wouldn't say that about most things. I think that but I do think that, you know, youth is definitely my strong suit when it comes to knowing what we need for the nighttime economy. And what I hear when I'm out with my friends and when I'm out with young people is there isn't a market for creatives here. There isn't a market for artists, for DJs, for musicians, for dancers, for actors. And that's something that we should have. We're the creative capital. We have one of the best art schools in the world, right, in this city. And if we want people to stay, and if we want people to open their companies, their businesses, grow the workforce here, we need to have, you know, a world-class entertainment scene that makes people want to create jobs here. And so it's something I'm really excited about. I think that, you know, hundreds of people signed up when we went live with the PBD After Dark campaign and had a survey. And so it's obvious, you know, like, this is going to be a really good way to get some young people that aren't really engaged with the municipal governments excited maybe about voting and about a municipal campaign. And I'm really looking forward to see how we can expand the nightlife in Providence.
Absolutely. And yes, you mentioned bringing your perspective as a young person to your job. Do you ever feel like with your colleagues or, you know, with other political leaders that they don't take you as seriously because you're young?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of times people will be dismissive of me and my opinions, and they'll think that I say things to get attention, or I say things, you know, because I don't really understand. Especially, I mean, it was so clear last week when I made the statement about Christopher Columbus. And all these people were coming at me with like history lessons and facts. And, you know, the reality is, just because I'm 22 doesn't mean I don't, you know, have an understanding of social issues. I don't have an understanding of, you know, our nation's history. And I would even say, you know, sometimes these people, when they try to correct me and when they try to kind of offer condescending, well-intentioned advice, it's out of a place of ignorance for them. And I do think, you know, absolutely, when I look at my friends, when I look at the people that I spend time with who are my age in the city, you know, they're more accepting than older generations, and they get, you know, a lot of really, really uncomfortable issues in a way that older people, I don't think, do understand. And so, you know, you got to kind of roll with it and like take people as they are. But I am looking forward to what the next generation of Rhode Islanders and Rhode Island politics will look like, for sure.
So how do you deal with that when you're faced with people treating you that way or maybe not taking you as seriously as you'd like?
Yeah, I receive a lot of criticism, and I definitely receive a lot of dismissive behavior, you know, from colleagues, from people in power, from, you know, the establishment. And, you know, I think the best thing I can do is try to, first of all, be absolutely unforgiving in my beliefs. You know, don't apologize for things that you're saying that you believe in. And also, like, people kept saying it to me when I was running for office: you have to have a thick skin for politics. And unfortunately, it's true, because people are nasty. The system doesn't really work. System certainly doesn't work here. People are corrupt. And you do have to have a thick skin. You have to, you know, realize that at the end of the day, some people will say nasty things about you. They'll say nasty things about your character and your beliefs, and you got to just let it roll off.
And how do you deal with disagreements on the city council? Like, if something's being proposed that you know are strongly against, how do you deal with that?
You know, I think communication is the best possible way. you know, it's a big council. There's 15 of us, so everyone's different. You know, you're not going to agree with everyone on every issue. I do think it's important, though, to, you know, think about the ideology before you think about the person. I always try to think about every piece of or every ordinance or everything that I vote on as not who's introducing it, but what are we voting on and what is it going to do for the city? And is it going to be the best thing for the city? So I think communication, you know, you also can't build relationships and get an agenda through if you're not open and honest with your colleagues and trying to build relationships with them.
Yeah. And do you find you ever clash with your own constituents, like in your ward, about what your priorities are?
No, I don't really. I mean, there's always going to be one or two people, you know, the oddballs that will never be happy with what you do. But, you know, generally, my constituents are really happy. You know, when I do things that people view as more controversial, like, for instance, when I came out and supported decriminalizing sex work and prostitution, all these people were writing to me saying my constituents were going to be furious, they were going to hate me. And I cannot tell you how many people reached out and were like, thank you for doing this. I am so glad that you represent me. And it's stuff like that. You know, like, I feel like I do represent my neighborhood. You know, I know what it's like to be a renter, to live paycheck to paycheck. I know what it's like to live in our neighborhood and want to see it be better. I know what it's like to like love this city so much and want it to be the best that it can be. And I also, you know, I think that that's something that people don't understand a lot, is that I do listen to my neighborhood, you know, and I think a lot of people do. And so people from out of town or people from not Providence may, you know, think that you're being controversial or your opinions are wrong and you're too progressive, you're a snowflake. But, you know, the reality is my constituents are with me. And if they weren't, you know, I'd be acting differently.
And I know you talked a little bit about your priorities for your own ward, but is there anything you see on the horizon happening council-wide that you really want to see go through?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen this council, but 3 years from now, it's going to be almost an all new council. And I think that's going to be a tremendous opportunity to have a whole new group of people that are committed to a certain agenda. Because right now, you know, we're not really, there aren't any significant campaigns going on around a certain issue. But, you know, I think there is a possibility to do something like rent control. I think there is a possibility to decriminalize, you know, open container drinking. I think there is a possibility to decriminalize the entire municipal code. You know, really bold, bold plans that the city can do. It's a progressive place, and we just need to have an agenda set forth and councilors that are willing to do that work. And I think 3 years from now, that could be an opportunity.
Do you already know that you will run again?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think it depends on what happens in my neighborhood and what my neighborhood wants. And also, I'm 22, you know, I'll have lived a whole lifetime in 3 years.